Today, our study, we turn our attention to a house in the region of Tyre and Sidon. One of the things that kind of has caught my imagination as I've worked on this series for our class is how much all of these episodes have in common, and yet how different they all are. I think that might be a sort of a little acted out parable about their application to our families too. All of our houses, our families are different, and yet we have a whole bunch of things in common. The same kinds of problems and the same kind of concerns, the same kind of challenges and responsibilities and blessings and all of that are shared in our homes. And that's one of the reasons I think we can benefit from observing how the Lord behaves himself toward these families. This one today is in particular an interesting one because it happens in one house, which is in an unusual location in the New Testament scheme of things, but it concerns what's going on in a house somewhere else where the Lord doesn't visit and where we're not told a whole bunch of details about it. It's unusual in that way, but it's the same in that the quality in this woman's life and character is what we've seen Jesus looking for everywhere, and the concern she has on her heart is something that every one of us can identify with, and we have seen in some other places. Let's read the passage first, Matthew 15, verses 21 through 28. And I mention again, it's in Mark 7 in verse 24, which suggests this occurs in a house. So we read it to start with here. We have somebody who's eager to read today. All right, Larry, please do. Matthew 15, 21 to 28.
Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And then she came and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, help me." But he answered and said, "It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be as you desire, to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very hour.
All right. Thanks, Larry. I read someone's comment in preparing for this, which said simply, this is one of the most puzzling events in the ministry of Jesus. Can you see why when you look at it? You almost have to know the tone of voice in which some of these things were said in order to recognize why it's said. And it's real important to think about who Jesus is looking at when he says it and what his facial expression is and so on. We can't, of course, do all of that. I do think, however, that we can grasp the situation and that will help us maybe to appreciate the lesson that's here a little bit better, and that's what we'll try to do. I've chosen to do it mostly by raising the questions and let you guys come up with answers today, so we'll see how that works. I start here with the matter of what the significance is of Jesus being in the region of Tyre and Sidon. Where were the cities of Tyre and Sidon? I see some of you already looking in that often neglected part of the Bible, the maps. What are the regions of, where are Tyre and Sidon? All right, they are on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. They're on the northeastern corner of the Sea the Mediterranean Sea, which means they're off to the northwest of Galilee, where Jesus was brought up and where he conducted most of his ministry. Tyre and Sidon are both, they're right on the coast. In fact, Tyre was originally on a little island just off of the coast, and it became a part of the land as a part of an attack against it during the period of the Greek influence in that area. So that's part of it. The part of the country or the area in which it was located, it was called Phoenicia. Phoenicia was a thin strip along the coast, which was a part of Syria, of the Roman province of Syria during the days of Jesus, during the time of Jesus. All right, that's the geographical part of this. What is the spiritual significance of Jesus being in the region of Tyre and Sidon?
The Jews were not a lot of them there.
All right, exactly. This is a Gentile region. And this is the first time in the gospel records that we have any account of where Jesus was in a Gentile area, where he went there on purpose. And this seems to me, from everything that we can discover, this seems to me to be the farthest Jesus ever got from the land of Palestine or from the area that was a Jewish area, we'll say it that way. Now, you'll read a little bit later that he went to the region of the Decapolis, which was also a Gentile area, but it was just to the southeast of the Sea of Galilee. It's a long ways from where we're talking about this morning. But there is a section here where he works in Gentile areas. Now, that means that here is the first hint of the fact that Jesus has purposes that are going to be broader than a mission to the Jews. All right, so this becomes a geographical matter which has spiritual implications, if we can say it that way. This is our hint that Jesus has a concern for the world beyond just his own national people. All right, now, second question from this same verse, really. What does the fact that he withdrew, Matthew says, to those parts, and that he did not want anyone to know, Matthew 7 or Mark 7 and verse 24 says, what do those two statements suggest about his purpose in being there? And I've just observed that this is going to have a big bearing on what the rest of the story means. What does the fact that he withdrew from Galilee to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he went into the house and he didn't want anyone to know that he was there, what does that tell you about his purpose in being there? Chatty? All right. It sounds like this was not intended to be a public evangelization. This was not a preaching tour, in other words. All right, that's part of it. That means now that he has other reasons for being there, Russ.
Well, just earlier in this chapter, he was definitely confronting and having conflict with the Pharisees.
All right, and it was getting worse, wasn't it? The storm clouds were on the horizon, so to speak, in terms of the opposition of the Pharisees. And you and I, looking back, know where that led eventually. That would have meant that if Jesus could have continued his ministry in Galilee, where these stresses were beginning to grow, and it would have hastened the cross. Obviously, he had something else in mind, and that might be the third purpose here. What would it be? Does he go to Tyre and Sidon by himself, or?
Well, I think he also wants to show his disciples.
All right.
Later on, this is what I want you to do.
If he can see that opposition is going to grow, we haven't mentioned, by the way, that not long before this, news has been brought to him of the death of John the Baptist. So we have the opposition, possibly, of Herod Antipas also that's at work here. But if you can see that that's going to happen, and you know that these disciples are going to have to be prepared to carry on the work that you're going to give them after you're taken away, then you need to educate them and prepare them for that circumstance too. So there, another, the point I'm getting at is, I believe that what we are to understand in working on the background here is that Jesus went here mostly to teach his disciples some things that they were going to need to know. I think that's how you should understand the conversation between Jesus and the woman that unfolds. This is the one thought that will make sense of some of the statements that are made in the text. If you think about what the disciples are going to need to know, what is the commission that Jesus is going to give to them after he's raised up? Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. However, in Matthew 10 and verse 6, when he sent them out on what we sometimes call the limited commission, just to their own people, he told them to go to the house of Israel. Matthew 10, verse 6, I don't remember exactly how it's said, but let me flip over and look at it with you. It says here, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. All right, specifically, he said, now, something is going to have to happen, if you think about it, to get these men to be able to look beyond just the lost sheep of the house of Israel eventually. And that is the place this story may occupy. All right, number three. What are the important details about the identity of this woman who comes to him at the house? All right, she is a Canaanite woman first, we're told in verse 22. How does Mark speak of her in the passage I gave you there? Say it loud. All right, she is a Greek. A Greek. The Jews thought of people as during Jesus' period of time as either Jew or Greek. Greek therefore becomes another term for Gentile in New Testament days. So this woman is, Mark says specifically, a Gentile. What other term is applied to her?
Syrophoenician.
All right, Syrophoenician. Syrophoenician means that she is a Phoenician, a Syrian woman from Phoenicia. Phoenicia being the region of Tyre and Sidon where they were located. Phoenicia being a part of the province of Syria, as we've said during that time. So she's a Gentile, Syrophoenician by nationality and Canaanite by heritage. All right, we say it that way. And that means that we would have expected this woman to have been dominated by paganism, by superstition, by worldliness. There is no reason to have expected the kind of faith that we're about to see in a place like where Jesus was. No reason the disciples might have thought that they would see that either. Now, what need does the woman have in her house?
The daughter is dead.
All right. It says, my daughter is, what does it say?
Demon.
All right. She doesn't just have a minor problem. She is severely oppressed by a demon. The demon is also called an unclean spirit. And remember that there are, if you study the problem of demons or unclean spirits, you find out that they are mentioned in the biblical record concentrated at particular times, not throughout the whole Bible, but at particular circumstances or time periods in the Bible, and they are times when God is taking some major step in his purpose of redeeming man. During the period of Elijah and Elisha, for example, during this period of the ministry of Jesus. And what it seems to me is that whenever God is working toward his purposes by use of the miraculous, then his enemy, or our enemy, also asserts himself as if to claim the miraculous for himself like this. Demon possession in Scripture is never treated like an illness, although it could convulse someone or some other physical malady that accompanied it, but it was a circumstance in which apparently the best way to understand it is the devil tries to claim somebody as his own. And the Jews at the time thought that every unclean spirit had to have somewhere to live, and that an unclean spirit would search out a home in somebody. And it's a hard thing for us to sort out, but in this case, this woman's daughter was severely oppressed. Mark says, in the passage I mentioned there, that this was the woman's little daughter, which is, makes this a more touching thing. This is not any problem that is this little girl's fault or anything like that. She was possessed by an unclean spirit. Verse 30 of Mark 7 indicates to me that it was bad enough the little girl had been laid, had been laid in bed. So it is a terrible problem that would have hurt a parent beyond imagination. You can say it that way. And you can see. Now, why did this woman come to Jesus? She's a Canaanite, Syrophoenician, Gentile woman. Jesus comes to a region where he didn't want it to be known and enters to a house. Why could he not be hidden from her? All right, the wonder of God. Now, if you're a woman who has a little girl going through this terrible circumstance, and look for example at Mark 3. I've given you another verse or two on your paper, but look at Mark 3 and verse 8 as an example of what I'm getting at. Mark 3 and verse 8. This is a little earlier in Jesus' public ministry, just before the apostles are appointed. It says he withdrew with his disciples to the sea. In this case, it's the Sea of Galilee. A great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around where? Tyre and Sidon. So that means the word had gotten out. It says that when the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him. So the word had reached, the word of what Jesus was doing had reached all the way to Tyre and Sidon. I once had a dear friend, 30 years ago now, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it was. I was with him over at St. John's. When the doctor came in and said, "Tom, you have some other word, but lymphoblastic lymphoma," and Tom went through an ordeal of 11 or 12 years and struggling with the problem back then, but he told me one day, "You know, used to, when all this talk would be going on about research with cancer and treatment of it and all that kind of thing, I never paid any attention to that. But now then," he said, "all anybody has to do to have my full and complete attention is to mention the word cancer." Now, if you're a mother and you have a little girl going through this severe oppression, and you begin to hear from off there to the southeast of you that there is a man over there who's casting demons out of people, what do you do?
Everything and everything to get him to come to your house.
I'll bet you pay attention to where he is, and you have people who keep in touch with you, not by email or anything, but by word of mouth. And you're, in other words, this is a way of saying this woman had her attention fixed on Jesus and what Jesus was doing and where he was. Now, that might be a lesson for us to follow. Her faith originated from what she heard. Now, describe the manner in which this woman came to Jesus and the attitude that she showed to him. This is for your own words here, but describe those two things, her manner and her attitude.
With humility and pleading.
All right. With humility, the pleading and the almost begging goes with it, doesn't it? And with, persistence. How did she not get her feelings hurt? How was she not insulted to the point that after the first thing she said, you just give up? I mean, if his disciples are saying, Lord, get her out of here, and if he is saying, it's not right for me to give the children's bread to dogs, how do you not get your feelings hurt? I've seen us get our feelings hurt and walk off for a whole lot less than that.
Desperation.
All right. She doesn't care much what anybody thinks of her right then. She's not thinking of herself. Now, we've seen this in some other of these cases too. Her mind's on her daughter and what he might do for her daughter. So that kind of greater concern occupies her full and complete attention here. I would say humility and persistence is involved, but urgency. Barney mentioned desperation. There's urgency to this, isn't there? Okay, Linda?
The one thing I'm drawn to is that she calls him Lord and Son of David.
All right.
She's heard enough to know that he has the power and the authority to help on this.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I almost was ready to overlook it, and it's a really important thing. She is a Gentile woman, and she approaches Jesus and says, O Lord, Son of David. What kind of terms are those, Lord and Son of David?
They're important to the Jewish faith.
They're respectful. They're important to the Jewish faith because they are terms related to the Jewish hope of their Messiah, the Son of David. That means that this Gentile woman had some familiarity with the Jewish scriptures and the faith of the Jewish people. And that further illustrates maybe her humility. In an age when people are divided into racial or national groups like they were, this woman forgot all of that and just went to Jesus and asked him to help her daughter, John.
I don't get the whole table scrapping dog.
All right, you are getting ahead of me. And I don't get it either, so let's pursue the thought for a second here. I do think there's something we can learn from it here. What was Jesus' first response to the woman's pleas?
He ignored her.
All right, he didn't say anything. Brenda?
I thought about saying he ignored her, but you know he didn't ignore her. He just didn't respond to her, but he heard her.
All right. Now, why then? I tend to agree with that. He didn't say anything. He could not merely have been acting like she was not there, though, because she was keeping on crying out to the point that the disciples have a request of him. Why do you think he didn't say anything? What usually... Okay, Larry?
I think he was waiting for the disciples to respond.
Which they did.
He had his response ready for them. And the disciples, I think, they thought, well, he's not saying anything, so we'll say, okay, Lord, you want us to take care of this problem.
And that would make sense, wouldn't it, if he was trying to teach them something.
Right.
All right. And so his first, there is something that the Lord wants to draw out about this situation. That would be the reason why he wouldn't say anything to start with. Now, when he doesn't say anything, apparently the woman doesn't quit asking. What do the disciples ask Jesus to do? And the words are, they beg him. She begs him to help her daughter. They beg him to send her away. Now, what do you think they meant by that?
I think she must have been following them around, because it says she cries out after
us. Yeah, she keeps on hollering. Our way of saying it is she won't shut up.
Possibly asking to physically kick her out.
All right. I've always thought maybe that they just meant get rid of her, until it dawned on me working on this. This is my next question. To whom did Jesus say, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel"? Larry hinted at this a moment ago, but to whom did Jesus make that statement?
To the disciples.
To the disciples, not to the woman. I therefore think that the disciples were asking Jesus to give her request in order to get rid of her. I think when they said, "Lord, send her away," they didn't just mean make her get out of here. They meant give her her request so she'll go away. And that seems to me, I think they knew he was going to do it. And they want him to hurry up and get it over with so they can be rid of her. Why else would he say to them, "I was sent to the lost sheep of the house of"? If they meant just get her out of here, they would have said amen to that. I think they were asking him to give her what she wanted so she will leave. And that seems to be the thing that Jesus is responding to here. What does this have to do with the other things that are said in this episode? What does this statement of Jesus to the disciples have to do with the rest of this conversation?
That's where it includes the throwing of the crumbs to the dog.
All right. This is the point of how do we get past this. Jesus has to be saying to them, but wait a minute. I thought we all understood I was just sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That's how his own people thought at the time. I think there was part of that in the minds of the disciples here that he's trying to teach them and to work past. And that's how this whole circumstance begins to make sense. Now, one of the things I've mentioned here, is this the first time the Lord had granted a Gentile's request? Who's the other one we've studied in this series, by the way?
The Samaritan's slave.
All right, it was not
Centurion's
slave. Right, the Roman centurion slave in Matthew chapter 8 had his request granted. All right, when the Lord says, "I was to his disciples, I was sent to the house of the lost sheep, the house of Israel," what did the woman do? All right, verse 25 says that she came and knelt before him. The ESV says the word used is the normal New Testament word for worship. She worshiped him. Now, wait a minute. He has just said he had come to the lost sheep house of Israel. Now she comes and falls down before him and worships him. Look at the faith involved in that. And why would she have done it? She believes that he has power. She believes he can help her, or she wouldn't be doing this.
Plus, I think she wanted to prove that she's not just some crazy woman, that she actually believes that he is the Lord.
All right, and I think he being a man who knows hearts, knows this already, and he wants his disciples to see it. And his disciples still need to see it, because we think of prayer as being a matter of what we do when we're spiritually high and nobody has hurt our feelings and we get what we want. Look at this woman. They want to be rid of her. Everybody thinks that this is not what the Lord would do. And yet, she will not be deterred from worshiping Him and asking Him to help her. All right, now, we come to Matthew 15:26 next. What do you think the Lord, why do you think the Lord spoke to her as He did in Matthew 15, verse 26?
He just said that He came to the house of Israel, lost sheep of the house of Israel, and He is taking this little incident here and saying that I came to feed them first.
Right.
And it's not good to take what I need to feed the house of Israel and just throw it out to the dog.
All right.
Get rid of it.
Does that mean that Jesus was suggesting He thought this woman was a dog?
No, but probably some of His disciples.
All right. And the people, the Pharisees, from whom He had withdrawn, because they're angry with Him for breaking their traditions, that's why He's over at Tyre and Sidon to start with, that's how they thought. They divided the people up into Jews and dogs, and the Samaritans fit in with the dogs in this case, and so Jesus was saying to her what His disciples thought and what the common practice of the day was. Now, verse 27, and I'm in the uncomfortable position of seeing people head toward the auditorium here, so I have to have some more I need to say about this. But what does the woman's reply in verse 27 tell us about her?
I'll take whatever you can give me.
All right.
No matter how small.
Still, though, she does not give in to a reason for her request to be overlooked. She says, "Yes, Lord," and yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. She is saying, if I am to be regarded as a dog, I'm willing to be the dog. I just need a crumb of your help. That'll be enough. And I think it was J.W. McGarvey that I read working on this. He said, we do not know whether to marvel more at her wit or her humility or her faith. Look what a wise answer she had here. She had no reason to defend. She's not looking to defend herself or to argue a case. She wants her daughter help. She believes that just a crumb from the Lord's table would be enough to... And by the way, it gives the phrase the Lord's table a different meaning from what we have. But you see what I'm saying. That would be a blessing to her. Why do you think Jesus was impressed with her faith? As He said in verse 28, O woman, great is your faith. John?
This is kind of the second time that this has happened to him. Just recently he had a woman that was in a crowd just want to touch the hem of his
yes.
garment.
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe that word's passed on to him.
Yes. That's part of it. Why do you think he was impressed with this woman's faith?
She's
a Gentile first. Where she came from, Larry?
She had read Matthew 7:7.
Which said?
People
knock. That's right. Ask, seek, and knock, right? And she was doing that. This is the best example I can think of that. Anybody else? Here she is willing to humble herself and to confess it. I can't help but think in my mind that Jesus conducted the conversation like He did in order to bring out the statement of her faith, in order to teach His disciples that this is what He was looking for after all, and in order to give them something to shoot at in their own lives. Which one of them had this kind of faith?
And us,
that's right. And especially us in this case here. That seems to me to be the point of this. And one of the writers that I ran across said, I believe that Jesus said, verse 28, with a smile on his face. It's interesting to think of how he might have enjoyed the wit of this great woman and her thinking about what happens. Now, I've asked this here. What details in the record indicate the nature of a miracle?
It was done according to what they believed.
All right. Notice that the person blessed is not the one who believed here. The girl was in no position to do so, but the mother's request was granted. It happened immediately in keeping with the word of Jesus when he said that she's well, she was. And it covered distance. The girl was at the mother's house lying on the bed, and the Lord, from the house where he was, made her well. So all those things are involved. What did he mean for his disciples to learn from what happened at this house?
The value of faith.
All right, absolutely. The place that faith, that trust and obedience to him is going to play. What else?
No one is not more
powerful. All right, a person matters, and in the Lord's eyes, he's going to be concerned with a Gentile woman from Tyre and Sidon. And that's going to set a pattern for the rest of his ministry. Without Brother Pena here, nobody tells me if the bell has rung, but I can see that it must have. Appreciate y'all being with us today. Let's take some encouragement from the Lord's dealings with this woman in our own families. Y'all have a great week.